This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:41 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We are going to be moving on to our next story, which is an update actually on something that happened late last week when V2K was making the headlines. So if you missed it, it was a group chat on Telegram that was actually being used to share sexual content of women, and MCMC is in the process of investigating them. This whole thing was first raised by a woman who realized that her photos had been shared in the chat without her consent. She brought it to the public's attention on social media, and then several others discovered that the same had happened to them. According to Cez, who interviewed some of those women, there are over 35,000 members in the chat group. They reside in Malaysia. And so MCMC said that they've reached out to Telegram in June this year for further assessment and action. They are also working closely with the Malaysian police to investigate further and have asked Interpol for assistance. There are so many layers, I think, of wrong to this story. You know, the fact that such a group exists, that 35,000 is such a huge number, you could be, they are literally walking among us. That's one thing. But I think the other is also the fact that after so many years and after, I don't know, it seems as if it should be common sense. Sharing these images are, it's not good. It's not respectful. It's not dignified. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing good about it. And yet either, people are either actively participating in it or don't see anything fit to complain about. And so I think that there are different things that we need to talk about here. So there's a legal angle about how to prevent something like this from happening, especially on a platform such as Telegram. But there's also how to have better conversations so that people understand exactly why it is that they should not be participating in groups like this in the first place, that they should in fact report groups like this when they come across them. So we're going to be diving into this after this with Serene Lim, who is the partner director at Chris Network. If you'd like to talk to us about the V2K Telegram group, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:45 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're talking today about the V2K Telegram group, which actually comprised over 35,000 members. And in the group, pictures, sexual content of women were being shared against their consent, fundamentally. And so we wanted to talk about the various points of that, including how to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again, as well as the legalities of all of it. If you'd like to weigh in, that number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on the line is Serene Lim, Partner Director of Chris Network. Serene, thank you for being with us. So first off, could you tell us in the first place how these networks come to be?
So non-consensual sharings of women's intimate photos has always been around. It's not exclusive to Telegram. We have observed how perpetrators use different networks to do this, to, you know, essentially to sexualize, to trade and to distribute women's photos without their consent. But there are two things that technology sort of changed the game for them. So one is the ease of network. They are better able to find one another and to come together to, you know, do whatever that they are doing. And secondly, there's also the ease of access, right? People can very easily upload and download something on social media now. And then they even say that they had CCTV footages. They went to somebody's social media, they screenshot their photos, and somehow it is pornographic material for them, even though it's nothing. There's nothing sexualized about these photos, and yet it is something for this group of men.
Now, what issues does the existence of such a large network bring to the fore?
I think when something like this blows up, we tend to look at this as incidental, and we think that, you know, the solution is to report V2K and have them removed or criminalized as a solution. But the thing is, women's rights activists have been working on this for a long, long time, and there is a high numbers of unreported cases by survivors. Because of stigma, maybe some of them also felt that they are guilty for putting up those photos. So a lot of them actually don't come forward with cases. And even when this happens, right, they don't want this to be made known to public. They just want the photos to be removed. That's why they opt for other other responses. For instance, you know, just writing to the platform's owners, hoping that the content can be removed. Or maybe reach out to digital security experts or cybersecurity agency to help, you know, having this content removed. But I think this also points to a much larger issues we have when it comes to gender-based violence and how it is also taking different forms online and having different impacts on a much larger community.
So if you are someone whose pictures and personal data were shared in the group, what steps can you take?
Yeah, I think I want to put on record that I think we need to acknowledge that we don't have the language for this thing. And secondly, a lot of people are calling this as revenge porn, but it's inaccurate. First, it's not revenge. Second, it's not porn. It's just my, you know, my intimate images. The preferred terms a lot of researchers, academics and activists are using is actually non-consensual distributions of intimate images. I think very importantly, lodge a police report or lodge a complaint to MCMC because it is an offence and perpetrators should not get away with this. But I think I also want to acknowledge that every woman has very different realities and some may not want to make police report because of family members' reasons or because of privacy. So I think that is a negotiation and it's also a case-by-case basis.
So what specific laws are breached by this group and its activities?
I can think of Section 233 under the Communications and Multimedia Act, but I am also told that some of them are actually selling pornographic content. So I believe, depending on the age of the survivors, it could be sexual offences against the children or under penal code.
And can individuals be held accountable by the law if they share personal data without consent?
I'm of the opinion that them by sharing personal photos, information without consent, it's a violation of privacy. And the right to privacy is a fundamental right that has been recognized by our court. The court said that we have right to privacy under the federal constitution. And I do think that we should create a lot more public awareness around right to privacy, consent, so that people are aware whenever they are sharing certain things.
Right. And if we look at what's going on now, so MCMC is in the process of investigation. What power does MCMC have to ensure groups like these aren't able to carry out activities on social media?
I think the problem is not solely a legal one. What we need is a counter mindset. And I think this is a very difficult question because every country is dealing with these issues and nobody has the perfect solution. But I think as first step, we need a holistic solution given how it happens in every layers in our life. So this includes awareness raising campaigns, working together with the Ministry of Women, working together with Ministry of Education, working together with NGOs that are on ground providing support for survivors. We need to look at the way we raise boys and girls, the way we talk about sex education. We need to look at other strategies. We have policies around uprooting gender-based violence, even down to the road of having more women representative in decision-making spaces, including the parliament. Whatever that the governments plan to put forward to address these issues, it has to be a survivor-centric approach. Because a lot of time, these are personal trauma. It's not as simple as, you know, my photos is being stolen, but it's a violation of my bodily autonomy, my agency, because I never consented to these photos to be shared in the group, that's one. I definitely do not consented to the photos being sexualized and talked about in such a traumatizing way. So a survivor-centric approach is really key in whatever policies and laws that the government will be putting forward.
So we're seeing a variety of petitions and so on for V2K to be shut down, for action to be taken. But should that happen, or even if it does, why is it important to keep the conversation going?
Because there are many more such V2K groups in our everyday lives. And it happens not just for groups that are, you know, created specifically for the purpose of distributions of intimate images of women, but also it happens in our, you know, like WhatsApp chat groups, sometimes, you know, those that are shared between friends and family. They do share sexualized photos of women, and more so when it's an all-boys group. So I do think that is our collective responsibility to make sure our community is safe for everyone. And I was made aware that there is the other groups that has up to 80,000 users in Malaysia. And these groups are, you know, we can call for this group, this one group to be shut down, but they will only move to another, you know, perhaps different platforms to set up different, you know, using different technologies to distribute the photos. So it's important to uproot the root cause, which is gender-based violence and also, you know, gender inequalities or our understanding of, you know, men and women, you know, our knowledge around sex education. And I think all this distribution of photos do have an impact on women. There's costs that they have to bear. The most obvious one is mental health. It affects their ability to work and study. It also deters women from public spaces. A lot of women who are affected by B2K, they had to shut down their Instagrams, their Twitters, their Facebook. They had to get away from internet and social media because it was just too traumatizing for them. And I think, you know, with where we are today, the social media is a public space itself. So it is a violation of their freedom of expression and also a violation of their right to public participation.
Now, what kind of conversations or measures have been found to help improve awareness on this issue?
There is a removal action group in South Korea where the team would receive complaints or reports from women who had their intimate photos being taken and also being shared online. So this team, they are also trained to be counselor. They would handle requests from these women and they would, where they can, they would remove the photos. If they can't, they would send the request to platform owners to have the contents removed. I understand that MCMC is restricted, is constrained because a lot of these platforms, like for instance Telegram, they are based in overseas, and then local our governments do not have jurisdictions over them. But then all these platform companies are more likely to respond to a request from state government instead of us. So I do think that it would be great if MCMC can, you know, look at a response team to sort of facilitate that that response. And I think what is unique about the removal action teams that is based in South Korea is that they recognize the gender element and everybody in the teams is trained to be a counselor and to hold trauma because survivors of gender-based violence, they do, because for them, it's not just an offense. It's a violation of your dignity. So it's very different from, you know, your other different kind of offense.
Now, a lot of what we've been talking about has also got to do with how, with, you know, focusing on victims. So is it also a question then of awareness on how damaging these images and the sharing of these images can be?
Definitely, because, I mean, simply because all these women do not speak up. Even if they did, people tend to disbelieve them. So I think sometimes the absence, like for instance, the Me Too movement, right? Before that, people don't believe sexual harassment is a thing. They do not think that there's a cause or harm suffered by women as a result of them. But when you have enough women speaking up, and then we start to see a shift in our communities and on how people approach and talk about sexual harassment. So I think you're right. Definitely there is a lack of awareness when it comes to the harm that is suffered by women as a result of online gender-based violence.
And understandably, at the moment, there's a lot of anger, especially online, when it comes to this issue. How do you think we can bring the discussion forward in a constructive way?
I think a lot of the pent-up angers are due to lack of adequate responses provided by the state, by different parties, by platform companies. So there's a lot of pent-up angers among the women, and it's like, I had enough, I need to do something. And therefore, you know, social media provide that space for us to talk about the things. But I also think that we need to move the conversations away from social media, because, for instance, Twitter is not designed for nuanced discussions. It's designed for a reactionary comment. And it tends to highlight, you know, the more snarky, the more snappy tweets, right? So we need to move away from Twitter. We need to have these conversations in, you know, in family, in school. So if you're a teacher, you know, it would be a good time to, you know, talk to your students about this thing. And if you have your own friend circles, you talk to your friends about these things, you know, just get everybody to ask difficult questions and, you know, just to create a safe space for discussion. Yeah.
Mm. So some netizens have also shared photos that are allegedly of some of the men in the group, perhaps in a bid to return the favour in some senses. But are there legal risks to doing so?
I think there is both legal and also physical risk for these women as well, because then they are also exposing themselves to the aggressors who I believe are now really really angry. So there are certain physical risks for these women. That's for one. Second, legal risk. I think, yes, I would like to draw a parallel with women who spoke up about sexual harassment and then they are at risk of defamation suits.
Yeah, absolutely. And Serene, unfortunately, we are out of time. So thank you so much for joining us. That was Serene Lim, Partner Director of Chris Network on the V2K Telegram group that was exposed for sharing women's photos without their consent. If you would like to share your thoughts on this, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.